Good morning and welcome to Storylines. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Our guest today is Rana Bloom, whose work as a poet, speaker, and psychotherapist led to an intriguing appointment as poet in residence at Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto. Rana, welcome to Storylines.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be on the phone with you.
Rana, when I first read about your work with prescriptions for poetry, I was completely intrigued and I needed to know more. So I am so excited to have you here on the show this morning.
Thanks.
And last month when I called to ask if you were available and we started to chat and then the questions were just spilling out and we both kind of said at the same time, whoa, let's wait, let's not waste this juice because this is the interview.
Energy comes, right? And you don't want to spend it all at once.
Yeah. So I'm on the edge of my seat and so I'm just going to give our listeners a bit of the background that I already know about you. You've been writing since you were 12 and then you became a psychotherapist and then in 2007 you were going into a staff meeting and you had decided for yourself that you needed a poem to kind of soothe the anxiety that you have sometimes before these sort of big meetings. And then you gave yourself a poem to start the meeting. And about a year later, when you were about to leave for a leave of absence for a period of time, a colleague asked if you were still going to come in and bring a poem to these meetings. And it gave you pause for thought that maybe you were onto something and this incredible experiment of what you call using poetry in the world kind of began to spill out. So tell us more about this.
Yeah, well, that experience was very powerful. I had brought the poem in because I needed something, as you said, to get into the room, to get present because I was anxious. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea, really, that it had impact on her, my colleague, until she said that. And when I understood that, I started to wonder, what is it that a poem does, and what could it do for other people in these spaces where you don't expect a poem, like a staff meeting or some other public venue, like a cafeteria in a hospital, which is actually where I have been dispensing these poetry prescriptions in the last few years, or anywhere like that where there are people. And I guess that my sense is that wherever there are people, there are needs, and poems can address that if you can find a doorway in. So that's been my route.
Yeah, and as you've mentioned, you know, these places where you wouldn't expect it. I'm thinking prescriptions for poetry, you know, at Mount Sinai Hospital, which to me sort of brings up the, you know, it's a pretty traditional establishment environment to find you in there with poetry. That's amazing. So tell us how that actually happened.
I'm sort of chuckling because it's so true, and I think I just love that part of it. It's that I really find it just delicious when I get to go into places that are very formal university settings or hospital settings, formal for a reason, or business settings, and I find this way in. And it started actually with work at the University of Toronto, where I developed the program called Poet in Community. Not Poet in Residence, Poet in Community. The word community meaning to suggest this is actually a service. This is using the poetry to do something with the students and the staff, to offer them a way to express something or to connect to something or to write something about their experiences that they might not have, they probably don't have an opportunity to do in their ordinary day. And one of my the people I work with there said to me after being there for a bunch of years, your job is to stir the pot. Uh-huh. I thought it was great. And it is a rare thing to be invited into a place like that to stir the pot. But the pot I'm stirring is the internal pot that kind of gets a bit cooled or flattened. Or actually, it actually isn't cool. It's burning, but nobody's been stirring it. It needs something. And then to introduce a poem into that stew does something and activates something or creates something else. So from U of T, it led to conversation with Dr. Alan Peterkin at Mount Sinai Hospital and a pilot project there with staff, and then it just evolved from there about the infinite ways that you can bring poetry to a place.
And some of the staff have expressed how there's so much emotion that is part of their environment, and the poetry that you're giving them, or the avenue that you're giving them through poetry, has become a strategy for them to find ways to manage the heaviness of all of that emotion.
Yeah, it's so potent for me when I walk in there, and I kind of remind myself every time I walk in. The line I use is, there are sick people here, which reminds me of what the hospitals are for, but I also really mean there are vulnerable people here, and then I begin to go, we're all vulnerable. Like, it just, it's a bit of a domino feeling that opens me up to a different way of being than I might be walking around in a mall. And I like to bring that way of being to the mall, too, but it's helpful to be in the hospital. And in working with staff particularly, I get to hear and see what they're carrying, and there are many avenues for them with the poems. And one has been workshops where they can write poems, and that often surprises them, because nobody has to be a writer to come to a workshop of mine. They just have to want to express something or look at something that they're sitting with, and then I give them a way in. And they're surprised. The staff are surprised that it's not a poem like in high school where they're forced to do something that's terrifying. It's just a way of expressing, and they get to say something they've been carrying.
Yeah, and also receiving. You know, when you give people a poem, you have a motto that is, everyone who is alive could use a poem.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, I feel that so deeply because it opens me up, and I've seen it. I mean, and then the follow-up line, though, to that, Christine, is everyone who is alive could use a poem, but whether they want one is a different matter. And so I'm very careful when I go into a waiting room or into a public space. I do it in bookstores or wherever there's a forum and a person who wants it. I'm careful to be looking and allowing the other person to make eye contact with me. I don't want to invade somebody, especially in a vulnerable moment, with a poem if they don't want it. And if they actually make contact with me, I say to them, you know, if it's at the hospital or wherever I'm at the bookstore, you know, I'm in the hospital, for instance, I'll say I'm the poet in residence here, and a bookstore I'll say I'm prescribing poems today. Do you need a poem? And they usually look at me kind of like, what? And I play with it. And so it's kind of a very elaborate, very playful, and very serious, sober, at the same time moving exercise. And then in those 5 minutes or 10 minutes, if they will tell me something about what's going on in a kind of simple way, I'll ask a few questions and I'll shuffle my pile of prescriptions on, my little pages with poems on them until I can find something that fits and read it to them. And often I'll say, well, I'm allowed to double dose. I make, get playful and read them a few to make sure something fits. And you can see if it lands.
Yeah, you would see that relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Often people are moved. There's there's a feeling. There's tears or there's laughing or it fits. And when I think of it as like a prescription, you know when you take something if it's working pretty quickly.
You feel better, yeah.
And you know if it isn't.
Yeah.
And you can see that.
Something else you've talked about, Rana, is the difference of being, or the difference of receiving poetry as opposed to what we're always getting, which is talking or being talked at. And the talking just tends to sit on the surface of our experience. But when you use poetry for healing, even though the medium might still be the voice, if you're reading the poem to them, the voice sort of just drops down into the experience and takes the listener somewhere else to give them a different perspective other than just talking.
Yes, and when you say that, it makes me aware that even though I'm working in this conversation to be as present as I can be, I know that if I read you a poem, I'll go lower, I'll go deeper. Uh-huh. So I'm going to read you a poem because really, the whole practice of what I do is that I just say, I lean on the poems, like they do the job. I just, use them to go.
So that's a wonderful idea, and I love it. We're just going to take a quick break, Rana. Let's hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we will go straight into your poem.
Okay.
Wonderful. We're speaking with Rana Bloom, who writes prescriptions for poetry. You're listening to Storyline. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Storylines, and here's your host, Christine Cowley.
And welcome back. Today we have Rana Bloom, who's a psychotherapist and the poet behind Prescription for Poetry. Before the break, Rana, you offered to give us a poem, so here we are. Please give us a poem, Rana.
Okay, I'm going to read a poem called Lost by David Wagoner. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you.
Okay, so I have to do the show now, right? I am taken away by that. Wow.
Yeah. That's when the poem lands, right? Even though I'm not seeing you, I can feel the response. And I sometimes even do this work over the phone, and you can feel that it lands in someone.
Yeah.
Or if I conversation like this, that's the job of the poem.
I have to carry on with the show, even though I'm struggling to find words, but... At U of T, you also set up what you call the spontaneous poetry booth, where for like something crazy like a dollar, you sat down and spoke to people for a few minutes. And then after listening for what you call listening for what has not been articulated yet, you were able to find a poem that would help them in their lives in whatever way, shape, or form you felt would serve the moment. So tell us a bit about that work.
Well, it was the precursor to this, Eden, the original piece for prescriptions. But I just want to say, I want to clarify something because, yeah, absolutely. The aim is, I mean, I sit at a table with a big sign that says the poet is in, like Lucy and Charlie Brown, and I ask people what they need a poem for. It's a similar question, but I'm not finding the poem. I'm writing the poem.
Oh, right.
And I ask them, like, if you and I were to keep talking and we paused with your experience of that last poem and you actually felt it more, and I said, what do you need a poem for right now? We won't do this on the air because we don't have time, but we could. And you would say something about what you were just experiencing. And I would ask a couple of questions until I had the first line of the poem. When I had the first line of the poem, I would say, okay, you stop talking. I'm going to write the poem. And I write whatever is coming, good or bad. I say it's good or bad. You get what's coming. It's just to try to catch the truth of the moment. So I want to clarify that the intention isn't to help or hurt or do anything. It's not to make something happen, but just to hear and reflect back in a poem what I'm hearing, to offer it back. So, sometimes we use that word help, and it sets up too much for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think the intention of being present and listening is more reasonable and doable, and more can have more room. There's more room in there. So that's my aim, is to give the poem back in a way that will, or as I said, articulate something they haven't yet said. And often it does help or open something, but I can't go with that intention or I'm getting in the way.
Yeah, yeah. And so that word that you've used, articulation, is very precise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've also written 5 books of poetry, Rana, and they've all made short lists for numerous awards. And the latest is Cloudy with a Fire in the Basement, published by Peddler Press in 2012.
Right.
But I understand you're coming out with a new book in the fall.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, you can be the first to announce on the radio here with you the title, because I actually haven't said it in any public place. And just this morning got a word back from my publisher that she liked it very much.
Oh, great.
And it is now, and it's a funny word to say out loud because it's pronounced in different ways, which I kind of like the fact that it has different voices potentially in it, but it's the word salve or salve, S-A-L-V-E.
Yeah, perfect. Love it.
You know, there is a poem in the new collection called Salve or Salve, but it's kind of, it's that feeling of what's coming here in the work I'm doing. And the book will come in September.
Yeah, and you know, the title of that book puts me right in mind of some of the sort of feedback I've heard from especially other creator friends. Perhaps we're a little more sensitive to environmental, our environmental receptors are kind of highly tuned to what's going on in the world, and south of the border seems to be really disrupting our equilibrium. So the idea of a salve for troubling times or kind of high anxiety times seems like just exactly what we need right now.
I agree. I mean, it's also a bit of a, you know, high expectation for this to be the salve, but we need lots, and part of the salve is also truth and honesty. I mean, you actually have to open the wound to heal the wound and clean the wound, and, you know, as we were discussing earlier that, you know, it's Mental Health Awareness Week, and yesterday was about talking, and so the salve is also cleaning and seeing and looking and keeping our eyes open and then finding something that hopefully can address and speak to and bring comfort to.
Well, I'm thinking, Rana, we need to have you back on the show. We need to have you back on the show maybe in the fall when your book is out. And I'm thinking out loud here, but maybe we can do some sort of invitation for people to receive poems from you. So I won't promise anything, but perhaps we could work on that.
Sounds great.
That would be wonderful. So if our listeners want to hear more and learn more about the work you do, and you also work one-on-one with people, you are a psychotherapist.
Actually, I do very, very, very little psychotherapy now, but I do much more poetry or writing coaching.
Wonderful.
And I can do that, you know, either in person or on the phone or online. So that work is much more where I do individual work is the writing avenue. And if people are interested in finding more about that or any of the work I do, I have a website, and they can look that up, ronabloom.com. There's a lovely interview with just a few weeks ago with poet Susan Gillis, more of a conversation on her blog, Concrete and River, about this work. And it's just, it was just a really nice conversation with her that said, where I'm talking more, speaking more about all this work, and there's some more poems on there too.
Yeah, it's a beautiful site, and it really gives us a flavor of you, Rana. I love your website. So let's just spell Rana for people, Rana, so that there's no mistake.
RONABLOOM.
Great.
Like Rana, like Donna with an
yes.
R.
Yes. Yeah, and dot com, correct?
Yeah, ronabloom.com.
So now you're also doing a reading tonight?
Yes, I'm doing a reading tonight. So if you have people who are listening who are near Toronto or in Toronto, I'll be in Kensington Market in the one and only poetry bookstore. There is a sweet poetry bookstore in Kensington Market run by a man named Kirby. And it is the bookshop is called Knife Fork Book. It's actually in a coffee shop called Rick's.
Okay. And what street?
Augusta Street.
Great.
And it's Rick's, if they look up Rick's Cafe or Knife Fork Book, they'll see it online. And it's I'll be reading with another Peddler Press author. And it's Peddler Press that's gonna be publishing my new book in the fall too.
Good to
and
know.
I'm reading with another Peddler Press author, Conchetta Princip.
Okay.
Tonight. And she's reading from her new book. And it's going to be, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to read stuff from Cloudy with Fire in the Basement and poems from the new work.
And what time does that start?
The door- doors open at 6 and the readings around 7.
So for you lucky, lucky people who can get to Toronto tonight, you have an opportunity to listen to Rana in person, and I am very envious.
Well, thank you, and maybe I come up and read in your neighborhood sometime.
Yes, yes, yes. Big yes to that. Rana, thank you so, so much for your time this morning. It has been such a pleasure to have you on Storylines.
You're really welcome. It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Wonderful. You've been listening to Storylines on Hunter's Bay Radio. Today we've been speaking with poet, psychotherapist, and prescriber of poems, Rana Bloom. I'm your host, Christine Cowley, and I'm here every Thursday morning at 10:05 a.m. talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Thanks for listening.